we really need to eliminate the reality that we've lived in where you have to have a four-year degree in order to get access to any opportunity.
Many of us were raised with the idea that the key to a good career is a combination of the right degrees from the right schools, the right kind of internships, and of course, knowing the right people. But we know this isn't the only formula for making a successful living. And it leaves out way too many people who don't have time or access to training and resources. So how can we open more doors to allow more people to succeed and find new ways to think about education and training?
The role of higher education should be an opportunity for individuals to pursue lifelong learning at the pace and when they'd like to, so that it advances them personally or their career interests, but that shouldn't be the barrier for them to start to access opportunity.
I'm Brian Lowry. Welcome to Know What You See. This season, I've been exploring the world of work, what's changing, and what it means for us.
Hi, my name is Raquel Garnett. I am a revenue cycle manager for a healthcare company in New York City. And I'm actually interested in either transitioning out of healthcare completely or transitioning into a different sector of healthcare from revenue cycling to potentially more of the tech side.
Raquel Garnett originally went to college to study nursing. But then she got a lead on an opportunity to get an inside look at healthcare in a very high-pressure environment, an emergency room.
So I started off with just something as simple as registering patients when they came in, you know, name, date of birth, basic information, demographics, and then started the coding for procedures, surgeries, doctor's visits, things of that nature. It was very enlightening, a very enlightening experience. Previously, I had taken my EMT certification course, so there was a lot of stuff that, because you have to do an internship in order to graduate and get your full certification, I did have a little bit of experience. It was more clinical, so I was really excited, but when I started, my first day was horrible, so I was like, okay, this is like a very awakening aspect of healthcare.
What was horrible about it?
So the first day, there was a death of like a adolescent child. It was very just like breathtaking that people so young pass away, and especially when he was significantly younger than me. At the time I started, I want to say I was 22. Yes, I was freshly 22. And it was somebody who was 14 years old and went into cardiac arrest and ended up passing away. And it was just like, you never know like what other people go through and experience and how short life truly is. I thought that if I can handle things like that, and I have a long family history of taking care of sick people around me. My father was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma twice, went through something called a stem cell transplant when it was still fairly new. Took care of my grandmother, you know, until she deceased. So with my experience with health, and it's so imperative to have people bedside who care, it really means and makes a difference.
And when you progressed, you said from there through the ranks, did you have to have extra training as you went through?
A lot of it was crash course. I, you know, did the registration thing for a few years, and then I was trying to find a way to kind of take it to the next level, because we did a lot of, I'm going to say, front end coding, which we call it, which is a patient comes in, they say they have a tummy ache. We find out, okay, well, what part of your tummy hurts? And then we find what we call like a diagnosis code that is equivalent to, you know, lower abdominal pain. So I started off with that. And then I started looking at jobs that were willing to kind of train me on the job. And then I did end up finding a company who was interested in doing that. Started there, and then I transitioned into getting my certification for medical coding and billing.
Raquel eventually left the ER to work for doctors providing more specialized care. And she says one of the off-putting parts of her job is the way that healthcare is increasingly a for-profit operation. She says even if doctors start small practices to serve their communities, they can't seem to stay independent for long and have to join larger organizations to survive.
So I see that a lot more sole providers are joining major groups. And when they join major groups, it's solely based on just money and what are the numbers and what are the patients and how much, you know, we're bringing in. And it really takes away from the quality of care because they're crunching numbers. So now I've been looking into how I can kind of intertwine tech, because tech is a space where it's growing immensely. So I'm trying to find ways to integrate tech into healthcare that I already know. One thing is I'm interested in is like the AWS cloud, which provides like software that providers can potentially use for a more cost-efficient rate.
With that, it sounds like that might require some kind of training outside. It seems like it might be hard to do that on the job. So how are you thinking about getting the training you need?
So one of the things that I'm looking at is utilizing like online educational tools like a Coursera. I know that Amazon, you can go straight through them and utilize some of their software to get the basic training. And then as you would like to build on that, well, one of the courses that I'm most interested in right now, and I'm about 60% through the modules. So, you know, trying to utilize free time to kind of get to the next step. But you're right, it is difficult to balance any type of education and working full time in addition to life.
Does your job pay for any of this? I'm curious, do you get support for the education?
In my job, they will not pay for anything unless if it is directly attributed to the role that you are currently in. My previous employer was not union there, but everyone who they did move to union, their benefits were significantly better when it came to education. Because as long as it could be in the healthcare field, they would pay for it. So if I was, let's say, you know, what I'm doing now, revenue cycle management, and I wanted to transfer it to tech in healthcare, they would still pay for my education. So it usually just depends on what entity you work for, how they would reimburse you with that. Luckily, a lot of the certifications, you can take the courses for free. You would just have to pay for the tests out of pocket.
Do you have particular jobs in mind, or are you just thinking this is some way I'm going to find a job, or do you have jobs in mind?
I think right now I am more of just, let's see if I even like this first. Because one thing that I've realized from my experience is that when I started going to school, like, I want to be a nurse. That was my original goal. And then I was like, okay, well, after my experience working in an emergency room, I'm like, I don't know if I want to be a nurse. Nurses, you know, deal with a lot and they work really hard. And I know people who work in tech, they received a $150,000 sign-in bonus and they're making $250,000 a year. I don't know any nurses who make $250,000 a year. And I don't know any nurses, you know, who got a signing bonus of $150,000. But these are the people when COVID happened are on the front lines. I guess that's kind of, let me see if I like it first, because a lot of people, you know, go to school to become doctors or lawyers or architects or whatever. And then after 10 years of being in that field, they're like, I absolutely hate this. And then transition, you know, into something else.
For someone like Raquel, who's been in the workforce for a while now, getting the skills and experience to pivot to a new career path is a tricky thing to navigate. Finding the time to go to several classes while holding down a full-time job is challenging, to say the least. I wanted to see who's trying to break the cycle that bogs down so many people's efforts to advance their careers. And one of those companies is PathStream.
So PathStream helps employers do more with the talent they have to help grow their own employees to have the skills and abilities that they need internally and to be inclusive and advance a diverse workforce.
Eleanor Cooper is the founder and CEO of PathStream. PathStream builds itself as a career mobility platform that offers upskilling opportunities. For employers, it's a way to train the workers they already have and give them new pathways to other roles. And for workers, they provide training and certification programs. Eleanor has been interested in economic development and opportunity since she started her career in finance. She worked in Africa raising funds for the United Nations Development Program, and when she returned to the U.S. to go to grad school, she had gained new insights from her time overseas.
I spent my time in grad school really exploring the question of how is economic development working in the U.S.? Where is the American dream broken and why? Since then, I've really been focused on building products and solutions that help individuals advance their careers within companies, helping companies invest in their employees and seeing a return on that investment. I graduated college with no idea with what I wanted to do, no particular skills that anyone would want to hire me. And I was fortunate enough to get the type of job where they do a lot of training when you get there. And it gave me a sense for, are there more opportunities that we could provide for more people such that their first job could really be a launching path for their career in the same way that, you know, I really felt as though the opportunity I was given to learn and grow in my first job really set me up for success.
And so could you like get into a little bit what you see as the primary problems in like the labor market right now?
Mm-hmm. The labor market is a super interesting topic. I think we're all watching it play out in real time. Continued job growth as the stock market goes down and the Fed continues to hike rates, but we're still not seeing it really have an impact on hiring. We're at an all-time high of the number of open positions available as a ratio to the number of job seekers. And we're also at an all-time high of the number of job openings for every new hire created, which indicates there's a mismatch in what employers are looking for and what they think that they're finding when they're looking to hire. And from our perspective and from the work that we've done, I believe a huge opportunity is the fact that a big portion of what everyone calls the skills gap is actually a perceived skills gap. We've not built the muscle as a society to do skills-based hiring, to see people's skills and not just look for pedigree and credentials. And so from that standpoint, we end up overlooking a lot of individuals who have a lot of potential and could be successful in a role. But at the same time, those individuals aren't able to see themselves in these great jobs because of all the things that the job description is padded with. And so I'm really excited about there's a much faster and easier solution to big parts of the skills gap and the labor market problems just by making skills-based hiring better.
What PathStream sees is an opportunity to change company mindsets around the amount and type of education needed for better-paying jobs, and pushing the idea that those skill sets already exist in their workforce.
There has been a proliferation of great jobs that are gateways of opportunity, and this has been fundamentally created from the use of no-code, low-code platforms. The more platforms we have out there that don't require software engineers to use to build, and the more individuals who can do things like business analysis and process, project management, IT, even some different security work, and can do that with a no-code interface, creates an enormous opportunity for more individuals to more productively contribute to the economy and not just be in manual, high turnover, low wage jobs. And so we believe that the proliferation of no-code, low-code platforms has opened up this enormous 2x wage increase opportunity for the frontline workforce. And so we particularly focus on these frontline individuals. When companies are hiring for these types of jobs, like a project manager or a data analyst, they're looking for individuals that have prior experience in that role. They're looking for individuals that have a college degree or have certain credentials that they believe, oh, this must be someone who's going to be able to do this job. And then give you a tangible example. So Acme Insurance has individuals at their call center. So those individuals know the company. They know the products. They know a lot about insurance. And those individuals, therefore, actually already have 70% of the skills that they need to do the job of doing process improvement for the call center and doing project management for improvement of operations within Acme Insurance. And so the opportunity there is helping the employer and the employee recognize how much of the skills needed for that higher paid, higher value job, how much of those are actually transferable skills that individuals already have. And then our role as PathStream is helping to bridge that final gap, that last 30%, helping individuals build on the skills they already have. And so we believe that the frontline workforce, which is perceived to be a low wage, low skill workforce, actually has lots of skills and abilities. How do we help those individuals get credit for those and learn how to do higher value jobs by taking the skills they have and applying them in a new context?
Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious how you deal with the first step. I think a lot of organizations that I've talked to have a problem with that, right? I mean, there's just a history of you have a job opening, you have a standard assumption about the kind of education that people need, mm-hmm. not because you've thought about like what they learn in that, in those settings, like let's say when they get a BA, but just because that's the kind of job it is, you require that as a credential. So I'm curious how you manage that, that first step.
So that's what we've built a product to address that. And the core functionality of what that product does is it's a guided intake experience for the individual employee. And our proprietary method of what we've learned of the right questions to ask, the right experiences to give them, that help, that give us the data points we need to know what are the underlying skills that maybe this person doesn't even know how they're transferable, but we can mine that from the input that we get from the individual, as well as looking at their prior work experience, their interest, abilities, and aspirations. And then we can take that information and help provide that to the company, map to the roles that they have available and open, their internal hiring needs.
Got it. And so is this really, this is a product for the companies, because you're helping, I mean, they're mm-hmm. the ones who are getting that real help, right? Because there's all this talent, given the way you're describing mm-hmm. it, there's all this untapped talent and they have these needs and they're having a hard time filling them right now. This is the point you were making earlier mm-hmm. about the number of openings to the number of what people think of as qualified candidates. Mm-hmm. So this is really a product for companies, not for the individual. Is that right?
Yes, and the company is our buyer and our purchaser, and we ultimately have to deliver outcomes that makes it worth it for them to invest in their employees. The origin of the company, the mission of the employees who work at Pathstream is about creating opportunity for individuals who we believe deserve it, knowing that skills and talent is everywhere, but opportunity is not, and how can we connect those dots? And so a core part of this is creating an experience where we can really assess for these skills, assess for certain competencies so that employers can see validated skill sets that are validated by a third party when otherwise there's a lot of subjectivity in the hiring process.
So that's what, when you say what your proprietary programs are, allows the organization to say, okay, these people really do have these skills, mm-hmm. as opposed to just having some arbitrary set of standards they put out in their job posting. Is that right?
Right. That's correct.
When you talked about no code, low code and mm-hmm. frontline workers, it'd be helpful maybe for people to have that don't know what that is, to have a better sense. Could you kind of expand on that a little bit when you say like no code, low code jobs, but also higher paying? What does that look like? What are we talking about?
We call these internally, in a term that's helpful, is a gateway tech job. So it's the most entry level job in that requires the use of technology. And really what the job is on a day-to-day basis is you're working in a software platform for a lot of your day, where you're using Excel, you're using Salesforce, you're using Tableau, you're using Atlassian and Jira. There's all these software platforms that individuals use to manage work, to improve processes, to use data, to gain visibility, to improve processes and efficiency, manage teams. And we teach individuals how to use that software effectively so that they're able to contribute on the job day one.
Do you do online education? Do you?
So that is our core area of expertise, is online education for working adults, especially individuals who are coming from underrepresented backgrounds and have not had probably a very helpful experience from education in the past. We've partnered with the leading software providers of these no-code platforms. So we're partners with Facebook, Meta, Tableau, Salesforce, et cetera. We partner with them so that we can provide an experience to individuals where they can build and work and do the projects that they're going to need to do in that new role as a project manager, in that new role as a data analyst. And so by working and building in a platform that we've created, we allow individuals to skip over high friction steps of downloading software and setting things up. And we just let them really focus on learning, building confidence that they can be successful in this job. And so by working in our platform, which is a work-based learning simulation, they're really simulating doing that job. It builds their confidence that they can do this job, and it builds their employer's confidence because we have proof of the work and the portfolio of work that they've been able to do.
I'm curious about the online education part because mm-hmm. In the past, I don't know where things are now, but when I was paying more attention to online education, it wasn't actually, I guess that's increased now for a variety of obvious reasons. Historically, it wasn't, the retention rates were really terrible. So,
yes, there's a lot of different types of online education. And so you can have the massive online open courses. They get a bad rap often, like Coursera, edX, for having low completion rates, which I don't necessarily think is fair. Individuals can go and learn, and maybe the goal wasn't to complete, and maybe they got what they wanted out of that platform. And so completion rates are not always the right judge of whether or not something is of good quality. But it is certainly true that if you don't put thought into the process of taking an in-person experience and throwing it online and how different that environment is, you can completely ruin the experience. We've seen a lot of challenges with the value of online college degrees, for example, and whether or not individuals are really getting the experience and skills and network that people pay for to go to college. But I'll also say that part of what we've really focused on building is the different aspects of the online experience that make it so that we use online for the things it can do best, increasing access, increasing affordability, increasing the ability to use technology for engaging and interactive experiences, especially when you're learning to do a job that's primarily online, but not relying on it for things that it shouldn't stand in for, and therefore creating a community as well and not relying on just somebody to be on their own, having an instructor and feedback, having a coach. So there's different aspects of pulling the best from online, but also not losing the importance of human interaction and the other format of how you're delivering the online experience so that it's effective.
The fact remains that many employers still require the traditional four-year degree for many jobs. A 2016 Pew survey found that of workers who took a course or got extra training in the past 12 months, 55% reported that they participated in work or career learning to maintain or improve their job skills. So needing to learn new skills doesn't end after you have a job. And in all this, what is the purpose in your mind of a four-year degree now?
I mean, listen, I don't think it's going to go away overnight, that many employers will still require degrees for many positions. And so it is probably still going to remain true that getting a degree will open up more opportunities for you. At the same time, we really need to eliminate the reality that we've lived in where you have to have a four-year degree in order to get access to any opportunity. And so the way that we've approached this is, instead, can we give you an experience that's less than 6 months, that's paid for by your employer, that helps you transition from below living wage jobs to your first career starting, well-paid opportunity? And then that's a great launching point for you to take the next steps and complete your degree at the pace in which you want to complete it. But having someone start in a high turnover, minimum wage job while trying to complete a degree online is not a successful experience. And so we have partnered with universities across the country so that everything that we do translates into college credit, so you don't have to choose between getting ready for a job and earning towards your degree.
But if you could wave a wand and boom, Eleanor gets to decide how education, higher education works and the relationship between higher education and the job market, go. What does that look like?
If I could change one thing, it would be taking away the fact that right now, the way everything is set up in terms of what the government funds for education for individuals is they fund towards a degree program or an associate's degree program. And instead, I think we need to have more of an emphasis on making sure that everyone has access to a skills-based career starting program that's fast, that's effective, and is paid for by the government. And so if there's a lot of discussion of, oh, it's really hard to measure outcomes in higher ed, we can't have a funding system for the higher education system because we don't have a good way of measuring outcomes. That's completely untrue. It's very hard to measure the value of a liberal arts degree program. I agree with that. But maybe we should have more focus on making sure that we're funding short format programs that help get someone to a living wage career faster. That's the first thing that needs to be in place. That should be the on-ramp. That should be the first opportunity that's available to everyone. And then from there, beyond that, the role of higher education should be an opportunity for individuals to pursue lifelong learning at the pace and when they'd like to, so that it advances them personally or their career interests. But that shouldn't be the barrier for them to start to access opportunity.
Should there be a concern that this is being financed by people's employers? Because in this country, it's like everything is financed by my employer. You get a job, your health insurance, your dental insurance, right? I mean, it's the amount of, I would think of as basic needs that are dependent on your employer. Now we're going to add to that the ability to get more skills to get a better job, and you're depending on your current employer for that. Like, how should I think about that?
Practically speaking, I think it's a lot easier to change the private sector than to change the government. And then to get policy through, having what I just mentioned, having that reality come true within how higher education is funded, probably not going to happen. So just as an entrepreneur, I would rather affect change tomorrow with something that actually does help someone access opportunity and advance their lives and careers and not have to wait for the government to change its mind about how they're going to fund education. And so I agree with you. There's risks and shortcomings. I don't love living in a society where we have to rely on an employer. But on the other side of the equation, the flip side, from working with employers, we've actually just seen how effective it is to help someone advance their career when the professional development and education that's provided is tied to a true outcome and a true opportunity, not a theoretical opportunity or a theoretical job. It's a real need, makes everyone really clear about the outcomes.
So I'm curious, how do you think about this, what PathStream does, what you focus on as a way to increase the diversity of the workforce?
So we hear constantly about companies with their social governance and goals around increasing diversity, equity, and inclusion. And oftentimes there are goals and talks without a tangible strategy. The big opportunity from our perspective is many employers have a significant frontline workforce, if not 20 to 60% of their employees are the frontline workforce, and their most diverse employee base is their frontline team. But instead of looking to create internal pathways for advancement and for success internally for those individuals, there's more focus on poaching externally. And so a way to be successful at achieving these diversity, equity, and inclusion goals is, why don't you create opportunities for the individuals who already are at your company, have proven their ability to be good employees, to be good contributors to your community, help them be your future specialists, help them be your future leaders. The current state of the world is opportunity is some combination of your education pedigree, the previous job you've had, which is obviously circular, and then networking. Right, and social capital internally. And so we need to stop relying on those as who has access to opportunity. And if we can have more of a skills-based, transparent approach to what skills do I need to acquire to access opportunity and a clear path for how I can attain those, that opens up potential for so many individuals who have the ability to succeed there, but just haven't been given that map that is only available to a few. And we need to start to think differently about our hiring practices and our employee advancement practices. That's going to be critical for the economy, for businesses to succeed, and for us to live in the world that we want to live in.
Thinking about what Eleanor's company is trying to do reminds me of what it feels like to know when you have options in your career, how energizing it can be to consider, even when it involves some risk, the possibility of changing paths. Raquel is at this point, looking back at her work experience so far, adding new skills when she can, and wondering about what's next. Help me understand what it is you'd be excited about.
I would say the thing that excites me the most would be fulfillment. My parents or my grandparents always say, if you love your job, you'll never work a day in your life. I don't necessarily believe that, but I do believe that if you find things that you love and that you desire and that you want to build on and make better, and you have the space also to do that, then that's really where you find your fulfillment. And that's ultimately what I am looking for. My father particularly, he is, I don't want to say very old school, because I know that sometimes people don't like that term, but he was raised by a father who was like, when I tell you what to do, you do it with no pushback, right? So I'm more of like the American dream type of individual, where it's like, you tell me what to do, I take it into consideration, and then like maybe we meet in the middle. But if I could find one good thing, if I focus on that, then, you know, I love my job because I kind of push all the nonsense to the side and just stick with that because that's important.
Are there decision points you see ahead of you, like places where you're going to have to like go one way or another? Do you see those things coming?
Absolutely. One of the decision points would be, God forbid I don't pass my certification and I can't pass it. Then it's like, well, what step would I take then? Something else would be, if I do pass it, but everyone is like, well, we need X amount of time of experience, would I be willing to take a step back away from a job that pays me, you know, to do like internships so that I can get that experience to then apply to jobs that are like, you need 6 months or 1 year or whatever, because unfortunately, you know, that's a real thing. Or it can be something as simple as I pass it, I get a job, but I'm not making what I was making. So, you know, I'm taking a setback financially. Is that something that I can afford to do? So there's definitely a lot of decision making coming in my future.
As we think about the changing nature of work, one thing we've learned is that perhaps a four-year degree is not as necessary as we believe prior to the changes we've seen in the labor markets. If that's true, how can we better create flexible routes to new jobs for more people? Removing as many barriers as we can to different types of work is an important step in creating a more diverse and equitable society. Know What You See is produced by PRX in collaboration with the Stanford Graduate School of Business. Our production team is Jocelyn Gonzalez, Jonathan Cabral, and Florence Barreau Adams from PRX Productions. Executive producer from the Stanford Graduate School of Business is Katie Wallace, and our website is maintained by Will Danger Robinson. For more about me or the show, go to knowwhatyouc.com. Be sure to like and follow on your favorite podcast app. Thanks for listening.